Welcome to the Responsible Management Podcast from the University of Bradford School of Management. My name is David Spicer, delighted again to be hosting the podcast, and I've been joined today by two great contributors, and we're going to be talking about responsible marketing strategies and all sorts of things around that as well. In terms of our contributors, Tim Gambrill is founder and chief marketing officer at Mighty Atoms. Mighty Atoms provide chief marketing officer support for SMEs. They're an innovative agency. Tim himself has considerable experience in blue chip businesses such as Sari Lee, Pepsi, Starbucks, Pizza Express and Virgin Money, and is highly experienced in delivering sales and marketing programs for high potential businesses, irrespective of size and sector. Our other contributor is a returnee to the podcast. Delighted to have Dr. Rachel Shrimpton back. Rachel's Assistant Professor in Marketing and the Director of the MBA program here at Bradford. Before joining the university, she spent nearly a decade working as a marketing consultant for leading digital agencies in the UK and Canada, and her research and teaching interest centre on digital marketing, consumer behaviour, and the role of conversational artificial intelligence in shaping user relationships and experiences. Welcome both.
Thank you. Thanks, David.
So our focus is responsible management, and we always start with that as a general question. So what does responsible management mean to you, Tim?
I think it covers off a load of areas, actually. But for us, I suppose our focus at the moment is around prudent spend of marketing budget. And I have to say, in 30 years experience as a CMO through sort of big and small businesses, there's still a lack of diligence in planning and executing your marketing spend. And probably in the last 6 years, we've worked on about 50 different projects, and there's always an opportunity to improve the efficiency of marketing. So the bit that we really focus on is making sure there's a good return on investment for our SMEs, which is really important in this current climate when people are having to watch their pennies.
So that resource utilization aspect of responsibility, ensuring that the investment we're putting in is making sense and is valuable for the business, for the stakeholders that we're working with. I'm sure you recognize that, Rachel.
Yeah, I think to add to that, I would say it focuses a lot on creating long-term value and not just focusing on the short-term gains and making sure that everything that we do is working towards an end goal that demonstrates long-term value. I think especially with marketing, it's also about building trust and accountability with stakeholders, whether it's your customers, the employees of your company, the community you're working in. So it's finding that balance between profit and value, but also building trust and keeping yourselves accountable.
Brilliant. So we're here to talk about implementing effective marketing strategies. I think you've set that up for us brilliantly. What are the key things that businesses need to be thinking about in terms of using their resource in this regard wisely?
From our perspective, the most important thing, and we build this into our marketing audit process, is that you make sure that your marketing strategies align to your ambitions. But so many times we've met with the owner or a co-founder or a CEO of an SME, and we found out that their expectations from their marketing are either completely off beam or they're never going to deliver what they expect. So we start with a conversation around ambitions and capability. And then what we do is, after getting access to all of their areas of marketing, we use our analytics tools and our specialist teams to find out where there's an opportunity to make them more profitable. That's vital for us. And just picking up on something that Rachel just said, she's absolutely right. I think about maybe 10 years ago, there was a real move towards let's generate sales really quickly and lack of a focus on a sustainable pipeline of growth. But certainly in the last few years, there's been more of a focus in generating long-term sales.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think there's also a decent focus there about aligning your strategy with your business goals, but also aligning it with what your customers actually need. And I think when implementing an effective marketing strategy, there should be such a good focus on actually knowing who your audience is, knowing what they actually value, what they need, and what they want from you. Because when you're able to do that, you're able to really align your strategy with kind of not only the business, but also the customers.
I'd agree with that. And I think that one of the real benefits of digital marketing and tools like SEO is that you can really accurately develop your proposition. And Rachel was saying, a lot of businesses tend to ignore their product or their service when that's the most important thing to get right. Mm-hmm. But there are so many free tools and digital marketing tricks you can use now to make sure that you're generating something that your customers really want. So again, now is a great time to be efficient with your marketing.
We've used two key terms. I almost want to come back and define them in this context a bit more closely. So yeah, I asked about effectiveness and you mentioned efficiency, Tim. I think it's Thomas Lipton, isn't it? Half the money I spend on advertising is wasted. The trouble is I don't know which half. I like to think we're a bit more sophisticated these days, but how do we demonstrate efficiency and effectiveness in this regard?
We use two processes, actually. And again, the first conversation with the customer is about objectives. Where do they want to get to? But you'd make a huge mistake if you're just going to focus on your sales. But there's probably, we end up with about four or five key KPIs. And the one that sort of champions all from a marketing perspective is cost per acquisition. And that's where we like to focus. And the beauty of the tools we can use now is that we can get down to a cost per acquisition by pretty much every channel. So in answer to your question, I love that quote, by the way. It's absolutely perfect. We've used it so many times in copy. And the reality is it's still true, despite all these great tools that allow you to focus on making your business more efficient. But the reality is people don't. We did a presentation a few weeks ago with a group of CFOs. And the first question we asked was, how many of you understand what your true cost per acquisition was? And one of them put their hand up. So that's a real red flag for us.
Yeah, I think that's very true. It's understanding what you want to achieve and setting KPIs to measure that. One thing I always, when I teach a marketing strategy to our students, is I always focus on getting them to start off by considering what they want to achieve and then setting KPIs that help them measure that. And as they go through, you know, bringing their marketing to life, it's thinking about, okay, how are we going to test those KPIs? How are we going to measure them? How are we going to adjust them to make sure that at the end of our campaign or at the end of our marketing, we've achieved what we want to achieve? And without those KPIs, you're not able to do that. So first and foremost, it's setting clear objectives, clear KPIs, and then working towards achieving them.
I absolutely recognize that. I'm just sat here reflecting on, I've just been teaching the MBA, entrepreneurial leadership. And one of the interesting challenges there has been they've all been talking about potential business ideas that they could go and develop. Mm-hmm. And when you ask them for their metrics, you know, how are you going to measure the success of this business? They struggle. And actually, part of my argument is if you don't think about this now, you'll do stuff because it's busy work. And I guess that's the sense of the risk in a lot of marketing activities, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Especially, again, I'm thinking Rachel and I work on the Help to Grow Management program here. So we talk to a lot of SMEs in that.
Yeah.
And not all by any means, but a lot of them don't really understand marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they know they need to do it. They understand they need to engage with and interact with customers. But beyond sort of, does that mean I need an account on Twitter or X or wherever? They struggle to know the practicalities of that. Yeah, if you were talking to one of those people, what are the first steps? What are the kind of things that a novice SME or a manager should be thinking about in terms of trying to demonstrate value in this regard?
They all differ, don't they? To use a couple of anecdotes, we were asked to develop a website a few months ago for a business. Their main objective, they told us, was to make it more attractive to employees that they're trying to recruit because they were concerned about the quality of employees that they're getting. So we did that. And the question 3 months later was, why haven't my sales increased? So particularly in the SME market, there is always a commercial agenda. Mm-hmm. And 2 or 3 months down the line, you will be asked what you're delivering. But I think it starts with a conversation, a little bit like you're saying there, David, with what is marketing? Mm-hmm. Marketing and sales, with the advent of digital marketing, have become completely blended. It's your perfect Venn diagram, really. And marketing should be generating sales. So it's really down to the business's objectives. If I was an SME, what I'd be looking for is sustainable, profitable growth. Yeah. And you're absolutely right, though. A lot of SMEs don't see that as a marketing job. They see that as a sales job. So one of our first conversations is usually, in fact, we've got a fairly easy to complete questionnaire that we send out before we meet, which asks them about their objectives and asks them about their marketing capability. And that usually sort of draws out what their expectations are. And we can put them right in the first call.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And I think one thing that I always try to do is sit down as well and understand who the customer is. If you're going to be jumping into marketing, fantastic. And if you want to, you know, go down that route, great, but you need to know what the customer journey is going to look like and how the customer is going to behave in order to figure out if what you're planning is the right thing for you. Especially, I think in today's day and age, Tim, you probably see it as well. Everyone's excited to get on TikTok, aren't they? Everyone wants to get on these new platforms. And you have to step back and think, right, okay, is your customer going to actually be on TikTok? Is that where they are? Is that where their customer journey takes them? And if you don't have a foundation that's built on the customer journey, you're going to be just kind of clutching at straws, aren't you? And doing things for the sake of doing them. And if your customer's not going to be in those spaces because you've not mapped out their journey, you're wasting time, resources, effort. So for me, it's finding that customer journey first and foremost.
I completely agree. And I think that's what CMOs bring, is true customer focus. Mm-hmm. We work with freelancers, we work with agencies, it's part of our model. But the reality is most people on the delivery end don't tend to focus as much on the customer and the proposition. And Rachel's absolutely right. You can completely wrong foot yourself by moving the wrong direction. And of course, before that, there is a sequence. So the market that you're in, what is it? What's the problem that you're trying to solve? How do you do that better than anyone else? And then who's my audience? If you haven't answered those questions first, no amount of TikTok or clever CRM or fantastic advertising is going to get you anywhere. Mm-hmm. The businesses that really succeed are the ones that have really got something that's different or something that they deliver better than anyone else. And actually, to be honest, at that point, that makes our job really easy.
You're articulating key elements of that kind of startup lean canvas of, you know, if you're going to be setting up a business, what's the problem? What's our solution? What's distinctive about that solution? And who does that kind of speak to? And a lot of businesses, I get the sense, forget that as they develop. They get wrapped into the activity of running the business at the expense of remembering the reason behind it sometimes. Coming back to that brand persona or that customer is, I guess, is part and parcel of that conversation as well.
Yeah. So I'm old enough to remember some very, very clever advertising, which doesn't seem to exist anymore. But the one we always use is Duracell. And yeah, the story is fantastic. But it started from a very clear proposition. They made alkaline batteries that would last 10 times longer than their equivalent. And all their advertising was, our batteries last longer. And within 3 years, EverReady had disappeared. And Duracell had something like 75% market share. So focus on your product. Focus on what you're actually delivering and making it better. And then that's more than half of your journey.
Another one that springs to mind, which is local to us, of course, is Yorkshire Tea. So Yorkshire Tea, formulated for Yorkshire water. That was the old advertising, wasn't it? It was very much about being, you know, a local product for a local market. It's now an internationally recognized brand because they've shifted that positioning to it being about a high quality, high value product with that strong, you know, regional roots behind it. I mean, it's, you know, when you talk to, it's an interesting brand, isn't it? I've met people that are adamant, or it's Yorkshire Tea. It's grown in Yorkshire. It's like, no, it's not. It's just blended in Yorkshire for Yorkshire people.
But you're absolutely right. And when I first moved up here, I did a 6-month contract with Betters and Taylors, and they're fanatical about it. But the reality is, people just love the idea of Yorkshire Tea. You know, you couldn't find anything that's more quintessentially English. Mm-hmm. Than Yorkshire Tea, with a rascal from Betty's, obviously. but the fact is, there is something very different about the product. And when you come from, you know, I moved up from London, the first time I had a Yorkshire Tea, it was orange, because I'd left it in for as long as I would with, say, a Tetley Tea or another one. But it is actually distinctly different. You can get two cups out of one bag. That's what some of our neighbours say. A great example, something that is very different.
I'm just cutting into the podcast to tell you a little bit about the offer that we have for businesses locally as part of the business and community engagement support. We have our Knowledge Transfer Network, that's regular networking events where you can come on campus, meet like-minded people, hear from some of our and leading industry experts. We have our Bradford Business Challenge projects, where we have students coming out and working with you and supporting the work that you do. We have our consultancy clinic, where we have students delivering on short-term small projects for businesses as well. There's also lots of ways that you can engage with and interact with our students as guest lecturers, as mentors on some of our entrepreneurship programs, and through involvement in the curriculum. And equally, from a research perspective, we can work with you on collaborative research. If you think there's something we can help with, please reach out to us at BACE, that's BACE, at bradford.ac.uk. Thank you. And now back to the podcast. I want to come back to the challenges of being an SME in this space. We've kind of touched on, but I know part of your ethos, Tim, is about the big brand experience for the small firm. So, you know, focusing on SMEs, you know, what are the challenges of size that come with kind of marketing efforts and positioning in this regard?
The first one is obviously budget. I mean, you know, my last sort of major corporate role, actually one of my first major corporate role, when I went to Pepsi, I was giving a £60 million advertising budget. So, and all of our CMOs, they must have, although they've got big brand experience, they have got to have worked with SMEs because it's a completely different ball game. So I think the biggest challenges are, first of all, giving them an understanding on what you can actually deliver. So we spend a lot of time with them really trying to simplify our scope, because it's very, you have to be very clear on what you can and what you can't do. Because sometimes their expectations are that you will do everything. And our good customers tend to act more like partners. Making sure they understand marketing, being very clever with your budget, but we also have some processes that we use that just make it easier for SMEs to effectively invest. And the audit is one of those. I mean, I always use the analogy, you wouldn't buy a house without opening the front door and having a look around first of all. So I think it's really lazy of marketeers not to demonstrate the potential and the risks of what they're doing. But our audit process does that, gives you a P&L effectively on what the likely results are. So I think explaining marketing, explaining the benefits, explaining the risks, explaining the roles between the owner and the marketing team, they're probably right up there, I'd say.
Brilliant. You'd recognize that, I'm sure, Rachel.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one thing that SMEs sometimes forget is that there's a lot of opportunities that come from being an SME. You know, they can be very agile. They can be very authentic. They can build those connections with their customers. And I think that's sometimes forgotten because their focus is so heavily on budgets and resources. It's also worth it to consider, you know, what opportunities come from being an SME too.
Brilliant. I'm looking at my AI clock because it's now become a game, I think, in the podcast to work out at what point in the recording AI will be mentioned. And I suspect some of our listeners are probably playing that game because it is so significant and pervasive and a major kind of issue for businesses. And I know it's an interest of you both. So how is AI influencing this activity? How is it changing the way in which marketing works for firms?
So from my perspective, one thing I've really noticed when it comes to AI and marketing is personalization. It's been fantastic for that. And I think there's of course going to be benefits and cons to implementing AI in your marketing strategy. But one thing that has really been flying is the ability for personalization, and also alongside that, predictability. So using the data that comes from AI to predict, you know, your customer journey, predict their next steps, their behaviors, and then planning accordingly. So for me, personalization is a big one, but also predictability and the data that comes with it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think not just personalization, but retaining personal stroke human touch.
Yeah.
I think AI is fantastic. I think it's particularly good for SMEs, and it's something that we're working on, because I suppose our real agenda over the last few years has been about leveling up. Mm-hmm. And that's been making sure that SMEs can take on their sort of bigger competitors. So AI is fantastic. It's brilliant at doing all the hard work. Mm-hmm. There's a great example the other day of someone who used AI to analyze all of the search terms and come up with the correct sort of keywords for them to use. At the flick of a button, I mean, it just does things so fast. But I think the dangers are removing the personal element. And I think that's even more important for SMEs, because that's why customers will come to your SMEs, not just business-to-business customers, but consumers as well. They love local brands. They love family businesses. We do lots of work with Family Business United and Paul Andrews and the team there. It's a lot of this is about getting that across, because otherwise you won't be able to compete. But absolutely on the automation. The other thing to watch out for, I hate new marketing terminology, but you've probably heard of AEO, which is answer engine optimization. Mm-hmm. We ran a check the other day, and one of the businesses we're working for, over 50% of their traffic was generated from ChatGPT. So all of a sudden, Google isn't your number one target. It's actually your chatbots. So it's influencing businesses and marketing in particular in so many ways. The good news is for SMEs, it's fantastic, because it's a workhorse for them, and using it effectively will allow them to compete better with their bigger competitors. So we're a big fan of it.
How can firms be using that? What are the practicalities that kind of, if you were listing as a chief exec of an SME and think, okay, right, I get it, I need to be investing in it, where should we be starting?
It all depends on your, and I'm really going back to that meeting we had with Talal and the conference before. I think the sort of shared opinion is it all depends on your maturity as a business. Mm-hmm. If you're just starting out and you don't have much data, you could spend a lot of time and money on AI when it's not going to be that practically useful. If you're a sort of a novice or you're a new business, you can use, you know, chat tools and prompts to really help you generate content really quickly. As you kind of move up the chain and you're looking into things like databases, complex CRM systems, you know, what you really want to be doing is automating, integrating. And then, like Rachel says, you can use AI to personalize some of your messaging and help you segment customers more effectively. Mm-hmm. And then right at the other end, you're probably talking about generating new AI tools. But the reality is, it's for everyone. It's more about mapping out what your needs are. I mean, everyone should be using ChatGPT. They're just so energy saving. And even a lot of our creative guys use it because they say it's like having another copywriter. So you can almost challenge yourself every time. But just ChatGPT direct output, public facing. Because remember, all it's doing is scraping stuff from the internet. Yeah. So it could quite easily pick up something that's incorrect. And as soon as that's out and someone labels you as using AI, you really damage your reputation.
Yeah, I think that was one thing from industry. I know a million and one copywriters, and I think every single one of them was initially scared that they were out of a job when AI really started getting up and going. But I think at the point we're at now, it's you know, using it as a foundation and building on that. I don't think there's ever any benefit in taking a direct output and putting that live. I think it's using it and then building on it based on your human knowledge. You're writing human for human. So I think there's so much benefit there. And I don't think copywriters need to be afraid just yet. I think there's still a lot of benefit in keeping that creative and keeping that done, using it as a foundation and building on it.
It's about recognizing where we can use the technology to save money, save time, so that the resource that you've got is focused on the genuine value add. I was in class this morning with my students, and this is on the module Developing Skills for Business Leadership. Yeah, and I was saying, well, you're all using AI. And they all looked at me a bit sheepish, like, well, are we allowed to admit that? And I said, look, anybody who's not using AI in this room is an idiot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because why wouldn't you? But what you need to do is you need to use it in the right way, and you need to be demonstrating the value add to that. I certainly wouldn't draft something now without going and using AI to give me a pointer or a starting point, because that feeds the creative process rather than sitting there with a blank sheet of paper.
It does. In fact, it wasn't very well broadly reported, but ChatGPT went down 2 weeks ago. And all my conversations that day were about people literally not knowing where to start. So I do, there must be a parody in there somewhere, but I do worry actually about over-reliance on that as a tool. But it's interesting you were talking about students, David. I think this is something else. They need to know how to use it responsibly.
Yeah.
Because by the time they're in a position to be in employment, you know, learning to use the basic tools.
You nailed it completely. It's back to, it's a tool. I'm old enough and long enough in the tooth. I remember the internet coming in and people talk about the internet being the death of education, the death of all sorts of things, because people will just be able to search out on the internet. Yeah, all right, it's probably killed the yellow pages. And I was trying to explain to my kids that we used to have a big, thick paper document in the corner of the lounge when we needed a phone number for something. You would leaf through that and they'd be like, you did what? You know, surely you didn't. Yeah, you know, they wouldn't even phone this day and age. They'd go on the chat engine for whatever they were looking at and kind of interesting in. It's about using the technology in the right way. And you said it, demonstrating the value add that we can kind of create with that. I mean, it's possibly an unfair question, but getting to be host means you're allowed to ask the unfair questions. Is there anything coming down the line? Because the challenging thing is the technology is moving so rapidly. Are you aware of anything that might be affecting the way in which people engages with customers through AI in the future?
I think for me, and we've already seen some of it, it's customer service and how that's very, very, very quickly being automated. I think already, you know, if I went online to look at my online banking and I wanted to speak to someone, it would take me probably about 10 minutes to even find a generic phone number, whereas I could have had everything sorted through one of their chatbots. So I think for me, the biggest disruptive impact that we're going to see is likely going to be customer service. It's hard to get in touch with a person nowadays. And I think that's something, you know, Tim touched on it. I think that's something we have to consider as SMEs. You know, do we want to hand over that touch point with our customers to something automated? Or is that something we can provide value with and keep in-house or keep personal? But definitely customer service automation. It's just, it's already happening. And I think it's just going to continue to grow and to disrupt.
Yeah, I really agree. I think the big thing there, so when I worked with Virgin Money, we found out very quickly that people actually don't want to talk to anyone, particularly about their bank accounts, because they're quite sensitive. So getting people, so chat was a great evolution there. Mm-hmm. It's almost the big trick now, successfully triaging all of those customer questions and queries into the ones that do want to speak to someone, yeah, and the ones that don't, because there's some fantastic chat engines out there and you can get to where you want to within seconds, but there are other times when all you want to do is speak to a human, mm-hmm, and you find yourself blankly typing in human into the chatbot to try, yeah, and see to, it doesn't work. I think that's also a generational thing. I think kids, can I say that nowadays, they actually don't want to speak to people even more than we do. So a lot of this will move in line, and that'll be perceived as great service as well.
Brilliant. Thank you both. What would be your key takeaways? So if somebody listening to the conversation, going to go and reach out or talk to somebody about their marketing, what are the key things they need to be thinking about?
I would say don't spend any money on marketing until you know what profit it's going to generate for you.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I think it's knowing who you are, knowing what you want to achieve, knowing who your customer is, and then considering how marketing can provide you with value. I think it's silly to jump into it until you have that foundation. Absolutely.
Exactly. And be more challenging. You know, if you are working with consultancies or agencies, challenge them. The number of conversations we have with someone who just says, I've just been with an SEO agency and they told me I've gone from page rank 315 to 101. What does that mean for my sales? Mm. Challenge them, because they should be making it easier for you to make decisions. And that's really what we spend a lot of our time, is interpreting digital marketing for our customers to make it link to their own objectives.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, both. The final question that we've been asking all of our contributors over the series is, who's your management hero? That could be personal or professional, somebody who's inspired or influenced you in your career.
I guess for me, more of a marketing perspective than management, but I guess it kind of falls into the same. I'm quite a fan of a lady called Grace Beverly from a brand called Tala down in London. And I'm really inspired by the way she's built this brand from the ground up, but she's also built a really strong personal brand that is lent to the success of her actual brand. And I think that's such a value, especially now it's a multi-million pound company. But at the time when she was building this small business, there was such value in having that personal brand and utilizing it to further, you know, develop her brand in itself. And she still serves as, you know, a key part of that brand in itself. So, yeah, I think for me, it's the brand Tala and the founder, Grace. I think it's a really good example of a small business that's really scaled up, but kept that personal feel and kept the personal brand of the founder.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Yeah, I've got one, actually. Sorry, I had to think about that. This is an interesting story. So this is, I think it's interesting that you might have heard of me. He's called Julian Hearn. Julian worked for me at Starbucks. He was a contract marketing guy, and he spent about 6 months with us, and then he left. Well, we didn't actually, I'll be forever guilty for this, we didn't actually renew his contract. And about 5 years ago, Julian called me up and said, hey, how are you doing? I was like, oh God, he's going to give me a right going because I didn't renew his contract. And I said, what have you been up to? He goes, oh, I've just been building a couple of businesses. I was like, okay, which ones are those? He goes, oh, one of them's Huel. And Julian had realized that he was a lot more entrepreneurial and best suited to do his own thing, and went off and created Huel and got to that place. And it's just, I love it, because he recognized where his skills were and pulled his finger out and generated this amazing product. And it was the second of his launches, actually. He also launched a very successful online business. So I'd say, you know, hats off to Julian, mm-hmm, for, you know, working out what he's good at and getting on delivering it.
you can take some small credit in his success. If you renewed his contract,
I'm not sure he'll see that one. But yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you both very, very much. Really stimulating, interesting discussion. If people want to contact you, want to talk more, how can they find you? Tim?
Best way, either track me down on LinkedIn or go onto our site, mightyatoms.com, and all of our contact details will be on there.
Brilliant. And Rachel?
LinkedIn as well, or you can drop me an email via my University of Bradford email address. That's r.sammut, S-A-M-M-U-T, number2@bradford.ac.uk.
Brilliant. Yeah, obviously, you can find information out about us at the university on the website. If you want to reach out to us about the podcast or anything that we're doing generally in terms of business community engagement, the email address is BACE, Business Community Engagement, BACE@bradford.ac.uk. If you're following us on the socials, it's @BradManagement or @DavePSpicer to follow me directly. If you like what you hear on the podcast, please do give us a 5-star rating and subscribe as well. That all helps our kind of rankings, and that will help with our kind of search engine optimization and all those sort of things on podcast platforms as well. Thank you very much, both.
Thank you.
Thanks,
David.
If you've got a project that you'd love to get done, but you're struggling with the time and resources to do that, that's something that we can help you with. Bradford Business Challenge projects are where we get our students to do, as part of their dissertation, a piece of applied management work for a business like yourselves. Either one of our final year undergraduate or MSc students, with the support of an academic mentor, will be able to work on that project for you. There's no cost for you as a business. All we ask for you is to set up with us that project, give us a kind of outline brief that the student will go away and work into a full proposal for you, and then you'll be meeting and liaising with them and their academic advisor to get that project delivered. Because we have multiple students doing these over the course of the year, there's usually a group of students looking for any project at one time. So if that's something that you're interested in and you'd like to know more about, please reach out to us at BACE, base@bradford.ac.uk.